of the Hardwood Knox podcast. Dan Favalli is coming at you, this time once again without Andy Bailey and Adam Frommel, because they don't love you six or seven listeners as much as I do. But we have brought back on Hardwood Knox friend and NBA / Sixers aficionado, Alec Nathan, who writes for Bleacher Report and tweets things that can be often funny, sometimes offensive, but mostly spot on. How are you, Alec?
I'm good. I'd be better if the Sixers didn't lose to the Pelicans last night in pretty embarrassing fashion.
Yo, that was close for a minute,
though. Yeah, it was close for a minute, and then they were down 13 at halftime, and it got away.
So you're on mainly to talk about the Sixers at this point. At least that's where we're going to start. Nerlens Noel, what is going on there? And what is the resolution here? Like, isn't it just trade him already? Or I think you were talking to me before the podcast, like, maybe you don't.
Well, okay, so there's two options, right? There's one you trade him, and there's one you keep him through the end of the season and see if you can maybe dish one of the other guys and then sign him to, you know, you have him in restricted free agency, you have his rights, and you match whatever offers come his way. And Brian Colangelo seems to have already said that, you know, they're not going to make a bad deal, as he put it, just for the sake of making a deal. And he seems pretty set on that. But at this point, I mean, I would love to see them give him some time. The fact that they have been insistent on pairing Okafor with Embiid is just mind-numbing to me. And it's not just because I have like a vendetta against Okafor. He's bad with literally – all right, I'll read you numbers, but he's bad with every single guy they pair him with. So first, Colangelo said the other day when he meets with the media, he says, you know, now that they're all healthy, we'd like to see them exposed together, right? So they pair him with Embiid. So far together, they're getting outscored by 13 points per 100 possessions. That's bad enough. And then they say, well, we want to pair him also with the other guys as a 4-5 combo and see if they can work that out, because he's coming off the bench sometimes. Him and Saric are minus 17, and him and Ilyasova are minus 12. Like, where – there's clearly no pairing that works because his defense is such a liability. His weak side awareness is unbelievably bad, and watching him is excruciating.
Right, and here's my – like, the offensive, like, benefit just isn't there of having him, like, with Joel Embiid can shoot threes, but the Sixers' offensive rating is under 99 with Okafor and Embiid on the floor. That's
terrible. And do you remember what Embiid said after they started them together for the first time last week? And after the game, they asked Joe, like, they're like, how, you know, what did you think of that? And he's like, I don't like standing out and lingering and shooting all the time. Like, I want to do damage below the free throw line. I want to work on the blocks and I want to post up. Like, he's basic. And then yesterday,
he also criticized the defense too, right? Like,
yeah,
guys,
and you could see him getting really, there's a clip of him against the Lakers just like shouting at Okafor because he's late to recognize help. And it's like, it's just clearly not a pairing that works. Okafor is just too lazy for his own good.
And I'm not even sure he could be this. He needs to improve upon his defense, like, period. Like, it has to happen if he's going to have anything resembling an average NBA career arc. Yeah. But he looks like this guy, and it's probably tough to admit, of someone you burned a top three pick on. But he looks like someone who should just be coming off the bench and trying to pound second units. Like, imagine what a younger Al Jefferson could be in this NBA. Like, the Pacers are trying to turn him into that, and he's too old. And like, maybe Okafor can't even be that. He needs to improve upon his rim protection, his defensive recognition, needs to become a better passer, but maybe that's his role, and that's something the Sixers need to accept. Or you have to find a team, and I don't believe there's one out there that's going to build the offense around him.
Right.
Like, those are the two options.
I said before the season I thought his ideal role would be coming in as like a second unit anchor when you need Embiid to get a breather. I still don't know if that's even feasible, though, because who are you pairing with him at the four, and what do you do about his defense? There's just so many questions. I think if you can survive with him for 20 minutes a game, like, pounding away, and, you know, he can go to work. Like, he has awesome footwork, and I don't know, he can create for himself really easily, but also he stalls the offense. Because he's not a great screener. He's not the best role man. Like,
do you know who you could have paired with him in the second unit at the four?
Who?
Jeremy Grant. I'm just saying. That would have worked.
You know what, though? Okay, I'll say this, though. I miss Jeremy a lot because he was really fun. I mean, I hated him every time he put the ball on the floor because he can't dribble in a straight line, really. But I really, really give Colangelo props for pulling the trigger on that trade because Ilyasova has been really good with Embiid. They actually are one of the few two-man pairings that has a positive plus-minus. I think they're plus 4 points per 100 possessions.
Who gives a crap? Like, Ilyasova
I do because they could space the floor.
Ilyasova is going to be a free agent. You have to pay him, but you also have Simmons and Saric and Richaun Holmes on the roster. Like,
that's
what?
True.
They got a first round pick that's going to wind up being a second round pick, yeah. Right? So I guess there's that. But like, cool, Ilyasova spaces the floor now. Are you going to give him $12, $15 million a year this summer?
No, I would never pay him that much. All right. So I guess I'll revise it. I give Colangelo credit for staying true to his goal, which was not exactly the best, but he was like, we're aiming to improve and win games this year. And they recognized they needed a floor spacer next to him in that lineup. And they've actually been okay. Like, Ilyasova has been arguably, I mean, outside of Embiid, their best offensive player. He does his job. He does it well. Like, his feet are slower than Okafor's on defense, but he does shoot well. He spaces the floor. He plays under control.
He makes more sense if you don't have that pile up front already. Like, you just...
That's true.
Couldn't you argue that you need to get rid of both Okafor and Nerlens Noel?
Oh, 100%. Because when Simmons comes back, you have him and Saric. And that's probably all you really need.
And I think Richaun Holmes is just better.
I love Holmes, right.
So, like, couldn't you argue that, hey, he's your backup five, and then you have Saric and Simmons, and then you can talk about keeping Ilyasova on the roster long term?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to say, also, you can use Ilyasova as proof that that's just kind of also the mold. Like, they're seeing that it works. You need a guy with that general skill set to maybe throw in the mix. To keep some semblance of floor balance, because again, I think floor balance will probably be another issue when Simmons comes back, right?
Right. And
not to knock Simmons, I think he's going to be great, but we talk about pairing Okafor and Embiid together and how Okafor is pretty useless without the ball, but like Simmons is going to be the point guard. He's ball dominant. And I know it'll be different because he'll be feeding Embiid at much higher rates than Okafor does, but he's ball dominant and by all indications doesn't have a lot of range yet.
That's why you also shouldn't have him at point guard because today's NBA, you, unless you have freaking Russell Westbrook, you need someone who could play more off the ball and shoot. And Simmons isn't there yet. Right. You can justify putting him at the four, and being that situational guy who initiates the offense, and then you still feed Embiid and you have an actual point guard. And I don't like the idea of him defending point guards full time. I don't really like the idea of him defending small forwards all the time either. But right now, that's where this is headed.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like having a healthy Jared Bayless would have been really great for them, but
so what, Noel? Like, you talk about how they could keep him, re-sign him, try and move Okafor, but like this feel has like an Eric Gordon circa Hornets feel to it, mm-hmm. Pelicans feel, where he wanted to leave and they matched him anyway, and like that marriage never really worked out. Like, is this something? Noel doesn't look bad on the bench. He doesn't seem like he's pissed all the time with his teammates, but if you move Okafor, does that just solve this? Like, is that your solution? Okafor go?
I don't think that's a complete solution, but I think it's at least a like somewhat positive step. I would much prefer to keep Noel, one, because Embiid said he's his best friend on the team, and I'd like Joel to be happy. But two, did you see that yesterday?
Yes.
But two, like, you can actually conceivably pair him with him, and defensively, it makes sense. Nerlens can guard. I mean, Brett said he wants to keep Joel by the basket as a rim protector, and you can't argue that. So then you move Nerlens to the four, and he can actually guard on the perimeter. Is it where he's best suited? Probably not. But he can switch. He has the lateral quickness to switch. He has really proved that. He can wreak some havoc. And you can at least work with that. I know he still has terrible offensive deficiencies, but his redeeming qualities are way more, they're way more flattering next to Embiid than Okafor's are, I would say.
I guess you won't run into as many problems on offense, though, because Noel will set good screens high while Joel's down low and he'll pass.
And Okafor,
but he's never, yeah. he's never developed as a good pick and roll diver. Like, it's
yeah,
just
his
not there.
His hands have never been the best, but he's at least a more, would you say he's a more functional dive man than Okafor?
Well, yeah, but
right.
Okafor so, looks like he wears cinder blocks for shoes.
So I'm saying, if we're talking about a guy, even if you didn't pair them together in the starting lineup, if you're starting Simmons at the four and you bring Nerlens off the bench, like, I'd have more confidence in him as your backup center who's than I would Okafor, because at least you know that you're not going to be you're not going to be seeping points on the other end.
Which I think that would be the optimal solution. Dump Okafor. Like, at this point, like, I don't know. You obviously don't want to just burn through a top three pick like that, but he, like, just get rid of him. Like, find maybe Dallas will throw you just something. Like, I don't even know who. They don't even, like, anything. Would you take Wesley Matthews for Jahlil Okafor at this point?
You think they would do that?
No, I don't. But
I mean, I would do it, bad contract and all, and his bum Achilles. But we were talking about this earlier, but would you say that it's fair to state that Okafor's trade value is lower than Nerlens's, even though Nerlens has problems with public perception? I mean,
100%, because
right?
This is where the NBA is trending right now, and I think a lot of people take this to mean that centers aren't as valuable, and it's just that the center position has changed,
right?
So a certain type of center just isn't as valuable. You want a DeMarcus Cousins, Karl Anthony Towns, or Kristaps first and foremost. The center who...
You left out Joel, but...
Who?
I'll assume.
And Joel, because you want guys who can space the floor and be defensive anchors, kind of fast and loose, using DeMarcus Cousins as a defensive anchor, but he passes, and when he tries on defense, he's really, really good. You want them. And then after them, you want guys who can be defensive anchors, protect the rim, not really have an issue defending multiple positions. And then on offense, if they're not going to space the floor, be a pick and roll diver, be the DeAndre Jordan, the Clint Capella. And Nerlens Noel has that ceiling. Like, he
wouldn't
has
you say,
that,
yeah,
so I think, and then you have the bruising traditional bigs, where some teams could probably make it work. Charlotte did a good job of it with Al Jefferson.
I think Nerlens, I always compared to, like, I guess during the first year that he played, I always compared him to, like, I was like, he could be like a poor man's Tyson Chandler. He could, like, I don't think he'll ever be that good, but, like, that's his skill set. Well, I don't know. Tyson was such a good rim protector, and he was awesome on the offensive glass, too,
but
which I don't think Nerlens is.
I mean, he didn't blossom until, like, his prime was almost over. Like, Noel seems like he definitely, you could argue, I guess, maybe he has some attitude problems, and there was that rumor with what he did to a house that he was renting. That was, like, the most... one of the most disgusting things I ever read, but like, he hasn't been in the best situation, and I think he's shown he can be a defensive anchor on a really bad team. And, like,
well,
remember
the
Sixers were, like, good defensively his rookie season? He was like
They were like a top 12 defensive team,
right?
And he had one of the top, like, defensive box score plus minuses his rookie season. He was like he was way
ever
up there.
It was like, and he was, and I think even now he's like the only one, or there's another guy I wrote about this, who has averaged to this point in as many minutes in games as many steals and blocks per game.
Oh yeah,
as no, like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he has almost an equal no, he has more steals than blocks over the course of it, which is crazy to think about, because he's an elite rim protector.
And, you know, guys his size don't normally generate steals.
No. Yeah, so if they could find a way to jettison Okafor, I just don't know, like, what's his trade value? What do you accept for him?
For who?
For Okafor. If they determine, which I don't think they will, because they seem pretty set in their ways, but if you say, okay, we realize this Okafor thing's not going to work out, and we need to part ways, like, what, like, just to get him off the roster, what do you say this is the minimum we're willing to accept?
I have no idea, because I'm going through.
You're like the trade team machine guru,
right? Who needs?
It's like, not even a matter of that. It's like,
right? Like, does Orlando want to play him at point guard? Like, I just don't.
Their glut is maybe the only one worse than the Sixers, right?
I think, would the Hornets be willing to take him for, like, Jeremy Lamb? And I think that might even be too much. But that's probably the best return that you're looking at, because the Hornets just re-signed Cody Zeller.
But do you even, Well, also, they have, I mean, Hibbert's only under contract for what?
1 year, but they also have Kaminsky, right. Who hasn't been
have
great.
They have the god, Spencer Hawes.
Right. So, I mean, so is it getting to that point, though? You know, and I think maybe Portland might be able to be sold on him just because.
Portland? Yeah.
But Okafor doesn't pass or defend, and they're looking for a guy that does at least two of score, pass, and defend, and Okafor does one, which is the problem they have with
that's
everybody.
That's why I think Portland could bite on Nerlens, because he can pass. He's a good passer when he actually gets the ball in the high post. He has good vision. He's always proved that. He could pass from the baseline, too. Like, he's been solid. I just wonder what Portland gives up, because we talked about this earlier, but, like, even if they traded Allen Crabbe and freed up some of those wing minutes, like...
What about Evan Turner?
Please don't start with me. Because even then they're offloading the money, but they're going to have to pay Nerlens in the summer anyway if they want to keep...
Would the Celtics give up, like, a low, low-end first-round pick for Okafor and use him as that guy off the bench behind Horford? That would be something to consider.
It's interesting.
I mean, wouldn't do it if
Brad
I was them.
Brad Stevens can fix seemingly anyone, so I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, it'd be a good experiment. I wonder if this is probably a stretch too, but like, do you think like Miami would gamble on him behind Whiteside?
No. You got to stop Whiteside's already complaining about crunch time touches. You want to throw Okafor into that mix?
No, you just don't play Okafor during crunch time ever. The Sixers don't.
Well, okay, so that brings me to the other point, is that ideally, I think you move Okafor and you use Noel. Like, yeah, he can play with Embiid, but like you use him as that 25 minute per game backup five. How do you get someone like him to buy into that? Because he could clearly start elsewhere.
It's the same
problem with Okafor, is that he probably doesn't want to come off the bench. These guys are young.
Nerlens has been very vocal about, like, I mean, he was really vocal about it after the Lakers game. He's like, I played 8 minutes. This is garbage. Like, I should be playing more than this. We need to figure it out. And he said it on media days, too. I mean, he hasn't been shy about it. Okafor has at least been, like, a team player from that regard. He seems to have bought into it. He doesn't really say – he doesn't say anything – that hurts the team, really.
No, he just drives really fast.
No, he just, yeah, well, that too. And punches people, but.
Yeah.
You think the Knicks want Okafor?
No. You guys want Noah?
Philly wants Noah. I would gladly take Kylo Quinn, though.
Look, with Okafor, I don't think you move him unless you're prepared to just dump him. Like,
you're dumping him for, like, a contract, like, not even a contract, like an expiring and like a second round pick, right? Like that's what you're getting for him.
Would you take Tyreek Evans for him right now? Like maybe the Pelicans are willing to just
experiment
with Okafor?
Honestly, maybe. So
maybe if the Pelicans are willing to experiment with Davis and Okafor, like, and that's not a trade I like for either side, but is that the point where we're at with Okafor? Is that it's like you said, his trade value is lower than Noel. You're not moving Okafor unless you just want to dump him.
Yeah. I used to think there was something you could maybe do with one of them with Phoenix too.
What is everyone's obsession with sending a big to Phoenix?
They have too many bigs as it is, but it's because they have all these guards and these ball dominant guards, and people are like, well, the Sixers need one, so it's like seemingly a good match, but it'll never happen. I would take Brandon Knight in a heartbeat, though.
I think that trade is murder for the Suns. Like, it's just, that's how hard it is to find a fit. Again, you could dump him. Like, Dallas might be willing to throw you, like, I don't even know what their second-round pick commitments are, but, like, that's the return you're looking at. Like, you're not, I think the highest you can expect to get right now is I feel like I might be being ambitious, is in terms of player, Jeremy Lamb might be your ceiling.
I would take him. You know what I'm still mad about? You brought this up with Dallas, and I was thinking about guys I would love to see swapped. Why did they not pursue Seth Curry?
Pursue Seth Curry? That, I mean, so would you, maybe Dallas would do that. Maybe they don't view Seth Curry as a long-term piece. His contracts with Seth Curry for Okafor. And that's like, if that's your player ceiling, and then in terms of pick, maybe you get a top 20.
I would give Okafor, and I would give a pick to get Seth Curry. I swear. I'm being dead serious.
But that brings us to Brian Colangelo, who said he won't just make a trade for the sake of making a trade, and yet that's where he seems to be with both of these.
That's the position he's put himself in after. And I get maybe he's saying that. He's like, look, I can take a hardline stance publicly and I'm not going to, you know, like maybe these teams will offer more. No, that's not how this is going to work.
Especially when Noel's not playing. Like Okafor isn't playing well. So like this is
And the way he phrased it too, did you see, you know how Brett said Nerlens is out of the rotation and then Brian was like,
this is not a benching.
Well, he goes, Brett was upset with how his words were twisted, like, or interpreted, not twisted, because he did say he's out of the rotation. He said, you know, Nerlens is out of the rotation right now. We could experiment with different pairings. And then people asked, does that mean Jahlil could then be out of the rotation for a few games if you guys experiment? But that just leads you to, if you're going to keep experimenting, like, it's pretty clear what works and what doesn't. What works is everything without Okafor, and what doesn't work is everything with him, right?
And I think if you're going to keep all three and really, like, buy it, like, if we're supposed to...
And you're
going to
have, what, an 11-man rotation?
Right.
Like,
the only potential solution, and it's just, is getting Okafor to buy into a 15-minute role off the bench, and you start Noel with Embiid, and you hope, and then you never let Okafor on the court without one of, when he's healthy, Ben Simmons, Noel, or Embiid. But we've already seen that pairing Okafor with either of those bigs is bad. It's like, that's the catch-22 of all this, is there's not like, well, you bring him in the second unit and you just make sure he always plays with who? Like, it hasn't worked with anyone. But I think if they're not going to move anyone and they really want to give this a chance, it has to be that. Like, it's Noel and Embiid start. They play the lion's share of the minutes up front. And then you have to get Okafor to just buy into that severely diminished role. And maybe he's probably the easier one to sell on it. But now you're looking at a point, though, where Nerlens Noel is probably going to get Alan Crabb money this year. Maybe less because of his health history.
Someone's going to pay. Well, I wonder. Yeah, part of me wonders if his health, like, I don't think he'll get paid the same as Festus. But do you think, like, around that, like, Festus had knee surgery and, like, he had serious health problems. Nerlens has a torn ACL on his rap sheet, and he had this small surgery now. Like, he's clearly not.
I would say Noel's definitely getting eight figures. Like, I don't think that, unless the reason he's not playing is his health.
Is anyone not getting eight figures?
Well, we said that last summer, and Festus didn't. I'm saying, like, if Festus got seven or eight or whatever it was, like, how is Noel not getting 15? Like, I'm just, because we've seen him, like, in protracted action, and he's been very good.
I'd say, Festus is making 7.4-ish.
Right, do you know what 7.5-ish on average for the Knicks? You know, if they really wanted another big, instead of paying Joakim Noah up the ass, they could have tried to poach Noel from Philly, and the Kristaps-Noel pairing, while I still think Kristaps is a better five, would have made far more sense than this Joakim Noah. Anyway, but...
You know what would have been great is if Hinkie had just drafted Kristaps in the first place and we never had to deal with this.
Could you imagine him beating Kristaps on the same team?
No.
Like, I just don't... Maybe you don't have Simmons, though. Like, because Kristaps was good last year.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you don't.
Yeah, I don't think you get Simmons out of it, but it honestly might
maybe
be
maybe you do, though. Point. Like, Embiid was still injured last year. Noel was, like, only okay. You probably don't. You're right. Noel and Kristaps probably, like, the offense might not have been. And maybe Kristaps wouldn't have been good, though. Like, Melo helps a lot with in terms of drawing defenses away still. So, but, yeah, he should have. But Kristaps was smart. He didn't want to be part of this logjam. His agents, weren't they, like, avoiding the Sixers like the plague?
Yeah, there was that Woj published that piece, I want to say last winter, basically saying that his agents steered him clear of Philadelphia. They wanted no part of it, and
that's smart. I mean, the Sixers, argue Hinkie should have taken him anyway and tried to work it out later, but, like...
You don't want to deal with bad blood from the start.
Right, and let's not pretend... You know, we disparage general managers when they're quote unquote behind the eight ball. I think you were saying that Bill Simmons was like,
he said today, they could have had the triple unicorn,
right?
Which is they picked MCW above Giannis, they picked Kristaps, or they picked Okafor above Kristaps, and they have Embiid, so they could have had all three. But
Giannis was going to be as good as he is now. I remember going to the rookie photo shoot that year, and someone from the NBA told me that no one knows how good this kid is going to be, and it's funny. So, like, that guy was right. But
it was perceived as a reach at the time.
Giannis wasn't, like, on team's radar. Like, he was for all other teams could have thought, this would have been a Bruno Caboclo situation where he's just in Toronto taking up space and hasn't really amounted to anything. So I don't want to put Porzingis in that same category because, one, fans and even writers, and they tend to get uncomfortable when you're talking about guys coming from overseas because they don't know as much about them. But, like, Phil Jackson of the Knicks would have taken Okafor if he was there. Like, it just
100%.
The Lakers probably considered taking Okafor at number two. People thought Okafor was going
to
be...
Didn't Phil have to be talked into taking Kristaps?
Yeah, I think that's what the report was. And let's not forget that Okafor spent, like, a good chunk of the year as the absolute top prospect of that draft.
Yep.
So, like, you can't... it's not that you're defending Hinkie's decision, but it's not like he made this just, like, move that every other team wasn't already prepared to make. Like, there are... probably most of the teams in the league would have made that pick if they were in that position. Granted, it would have come down to team need, but him and Porzingis play the same position. And it was even like that when people criticizing the Lakers for not drafting Porzingis at number two. Like, that would have been perceived as a huge reach. There were people that didn't think he should have been in the top five. I remember writing something, and, like, my bold prediction was that Porzingis will go in the top five. And, like, that turned out to be, like, one of the stupidest bold predictions.
And it was considered an upset when they took Russell over Okafor. Remember, it wasn't
conventional wisdom. Right, so I'm saying, like, the Lakers probably...
Conventional wisdom for months was they're taking Okafor, the Lakers are a big man franchise, this is how it's going to go, XYZ, and then they flipped in the last week and they took Russell.
Yeah, so I'm not about, like, going after Hinkie for that. Like, I don't think he deserves to be... He could have went another route entirely and just not drafted a big. Like, we could be talking about, like, you know, Mario Hezonja might be fun in Philly, even though
he's actually just about to bring him up. I was going to say, what would it take the Sixers to trade for him right now? Because he's in the doghouse.
I think the Magic need another big.
Yes, perfect. Or Stanley Johnson. He's in the doghouse, too.
You know what would be interesting? Like, Covington and Thompson for Hezonja or Stanley. I don't know if the Pistons would do
that. That's a lot for Hezonja. I don't think I would do that if I was on. Maybe I'm overrating them probably a lot, but.
Well, I think it's just because their draft cachet. Like, they're so early into their careers and they were drafted in the top 10 or.
But I know that Covington, for all of his woes, and Hollis are functionally very strong 3-point shooters, and Covington's a good defender.
You can go Rashawn Holmes. And maybe Thompson for Stanley Johnson.
I would go after Stanley Johnson hard. I know he has attitude problems, and SVG's been ripping.
He gets inside LeBron's head. He's allowed to have attitude problems.
that was probably the first sign that he had attitude problems.
But so I feel like we've kind of run in circles though. What is the solution? Like Like, actually, can you map it out for me? Like, what is, and it can't necessarily be ideal, but, like, what needs to happen from here for the Sixers with this front court logjam?
You're saying, what do I think needs to happen, or what is going to happen?
What is the resolution here? Like, is it actually, like, it bugs me, one, that if they're trying to trade Noel, like, you need to play him to drum up his value. Like, he can't really hurt it, but... What is it just standing pat and re-signing him and then trying to flip him later? Is it giving away
then,
Okafor
because
for
then
nothing?
You're dealing with another, like, sour attitude in the locker room. And Tim Bontemps wrote this the other day, but, like, he was saying they have, like, sort of an obligation as an organization to, like, morally to maybe trade him. Like, they're not doing right by him throwing doghouse,
right?
Which I also get because he's the one who's endured all the losing. He's been here through the entire thing. It's been miserable.
Right.
He was the start of this.
But I mean, there's stuff that he's done wrong too, like not being around the team when he's injured.
Right, and that sends a bad message also to potential trade partners.
Right.
The optics just don't look good.
They are doing him a disservice in the sense that if he was actually playing, and I know he was injured to start the year, but. If he's not, even if he is playing, like, whatever role he's in isn't going to be the optimal role for him because Joel Embiid is there, which I get. Like, Joel Embiid is the shiznot, but they're costing him money. Like, even if a team is going to reach for him, there's a chance that he could have gotten, he probably wouldn't have been a max deal candidate with the way that the game is going, but, like, if he was playing center and being used as the guy that he was being used as in 2014, 2015, or even last year, they're costing him money because he's not producing.
And I think that's Yeah, I think that's part of what Bontemps is saying, too.
Whatever he costs, though, is, like, why would the Sixers want to pay it? Like, because now, yes, you have the flexibility, but now you have money, a lot of money, invested in this flawed blueprint.
I don't think, I can't see a world in which, say they hold on to him through the trade deadline, I don't see a way in which they can possibly re-sign him with Okafor still on the roster. You can't do it.
Unless the plan is, like, next December to flip him and Thompson's still under contract, right, next year? It's Covington that's the free agent, or one of them, maybe both of them are still under team control. You flip him and one of them for Alan Crabb, maybe, and then that saves, like, the Blazers some money, like, under
Thompson's
his new
a
contract.
Free agent, but,
so you flip him and Covington for, like, I don't even know if that's a good solution. Like, it's...
You also, part of me wonders if the Lakers stay at the current pace they're at, we have to remember the Sixers are going to get their draft pick, and that's going to be a lottery pick somewhere in, what, the 6 to 10 range, you think?
Is it top 5 or top 3
it's
protected?
It's top 3 protected. The protection's
fifth.
Diminished.
Yeah.
So part of me wonders if they then try to package that pick with one of the bigs, or maybe and they'd roll something out there and try and alleviate the logjam that way. But that's, again, you're waiting through the trade deadline, and
that would be a good way to move Okafor and get
value. You can't do it with Nerlens. You have to, right?
Unless you're going to just wait on that player and then flip Noel with that player in December.
Right.
That would probably be a good way to get value out of mm-hmm. Okafor, because here's
to package him
scenario,
with a asset.
And I don't know, like, if you're with a top 5 pick, let's say that's what the Sixers get from the Lakers. Like, even if it's maybe ideally it has to be fourth. If you go Okafor and fifth, Okafor and fourth to get the number 1 pick from Dallas,
and you still have what your own, you still have number 2 also, because they're gonna have like 2 or 3.
All right, so then maybe you trade your own pick in Okafor. Like, would that be a decent enough return to move, maybe not move up a spot, so you're right, but like, if you could trade that Lakers pick in Okafor to get, let's say, the Mavericks, and a lot of things have to unfold here because the Mavericks,
yeah, well, do you think
Sixers
Dallas
might
even
actually
does have
that, the number
like,
1 pick, but
right,
like, so even if Dallas has 2 and you have the Lakers at 5 or 6, would Dallas do Okafor and that 5 or 6 for their own pick?
Well, we were just saying that Okafor has next to no value. Like, do you think that he moves the needle enough?
But they could. Dallas has the.
Yeah, they. That's true.
I mean, I think I read something.
They have a functional use for him, and it wouldn't be asking them to take.
And Rick Carlisle can turn anyone into a good pick and roll finisher.
That's also true.
I am kind of thinking about Dirk Nowitzki and Okafor on the court at the same time.
Well, Dirk might be retiring, but.
Right, but and if he doesn't, you have a year of that, and you can bring.
Yeah.
You know what? You can still bring Okafor along slowly, I suppose. And again, I think it depends upon where everyone's pick lands. But if you're the Mavericks, like, and say it's the difference between going from 4 to 2, maybe that's a big deal for the Sixers. And to the Mavericks, it's like, you know, now we have 2 top prospects to go with, you know, some of these other interesting Justin Anderson, Dorian that we have. Like, maybe they look at it that way. And again, it depends upon if they believe that Okafor can be like an offensive focal point, but that would be something interesting to explore. But if you're the Sixers, though, even if you got rid of Okafor, how do you invest in Nerlens Noel long term? Like, you need to, I guess you really then need to invest the rest of this season in seeing how he plays alongside Embiid. Like, that needs to happen. Like, that's
the
only way.
I think that's what they should be doing, because it's like killing 2 birds with 1 stone. 1, you see if it's a functional pairing long term, if it's viable. And 2, you can showcase him for trade value. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, whereas the alternative is you don't get any sample size out there and you're not helping his trade value because there's no showcase. So I don't know.
The only interesting thing, like, would it, like, imagine what you could get maybe next year, like, with Noel's new salary and your own first round pick, like, and you could throw maybe, like, you're going to have all these other pieces. That might have the makings of a blockbuster.
Yeah. The other thing I keep thinking about is if they don't trade one of those picks and they do have 2 top 10 picks, like, this roster is already so It's like it's a log jammed seemingly everywhere. They already have so many players, and I know they signed guys to short term deals, but like you're going to add two more young talents. Something tells me they have. Haven't we been talking about since the process started? Like, well, eventually they're going to package the assets for a superstar. This is all going to be like when Daryl Morey traded for Harden. Hinkie was part of the, you know, framework. That like I know Hinkie's not there anymore, but like you'd think that same framework is still somehow in their plans, right? Right. I don't know who the superstar is who you target. I mean, is it Paul
it's
George?
It's predicated on who becomes available, though. And I right. Guess, and like, that and can, especially yeah. now because it's going to be so hard for players to leave teams. I think John Wall is eventually going to hit the trade block. It's not going to be this year because he has 2 years
And that would
left
be an ideal target, although right. this is finally the draft where they're supposed to get a point guard. So
well,
then
yeah, I mean,
you're
you can't target
development,
him now is what
but,
I'm saying. But like
right.
after – like he's eventually going to be available. So maybe that's someone you kind of chase. But obviously if Paul George was ever hit the chopping block, maybe next season before his free agency. But even then, you know.
But now that he can be the designated player and he can make, I mean, do you think
does he want to stay in Philly though? That's the other thing you have to ask yourself. Like John Wall could be easily swayed because he just wants his face on billboards. Philly can make that happen and he'll re-up.
I don't know. No one will ever be more beloved than Embiid. He honestly might be playing second fiddle. Well, I'm being dead serious.
Could you imagine the pick and rolls between those two?
Oh, it would be awesome.
Think about what Wall does for Marcin Gortat. Imagine what Embiid's going to do next to him.
I know. Oh.
So.
I think he'd be good with Nerlens too, frankly. But
well, yeah, I guess that's fair. He might even be good with Okafor.
I'm not going to go that far.
So to be clear, you're of the mind that the Sixers should just dump Okafor and move forward with Noel and Embiid.
At some point, aren't they? Okay, if we're of the belief that they're going to sell one of these two guys for pennies on the dollar, shouldn't it be Okafor before Noel, right?
The only appeal is
if
that
you're accepting, yeah.
is they have to look at the future contract value. I mean, I agree with you. I would probably get rid of both of them over the next year, to be honest.
That's I would be fine with that. Especially once Simmons is healthy. But I think if we're talking short term this year, which seems
well, I mean,
to be
even if you're talking long term, I think it's you dump Okafor, and if you're not willing to admit that it was a mistake to draft him, you move Noel for as much as you can get him. Because there will be suitors out there for Noel. We were just talking about the Rockets right. need someone to replace Capella. I don't know what they give you, but the Blazers would probably give up something depending on what they think Noel is going to command in free agency. So there are teams out there that would go after him.
You know where Noel would be great? And I don't know what they trade for him, but if you could get Noel as the backup to Gobert in the Withy spot in Utah.
What do you want these people paying their backups? Like, that's just like.
I'm not thinking long term. I'm very short sighted. I'm talking about like conceptually. It would be awesome. I know their books are already so packed, and they're gonna have trouble paying all their guys. But
Toronto would be interesting for Noel, and they might be willing to pay him. I don't know how I'd feel about them paying both Valanciunas and Noel, though.
Yeah. What do you think you pay? Well, yeah. And the other thing is too, it's probably a harder sell as Noel's a power forward there because Siakam's like legitimately been good for them, and Patterson's been great too. I mean.
Right.
And you have Sullinger in the pipeline whenever he's healthy.
Right. I think the bigger concern for them would be the Valanciunas pairing.
Right.
And he's even tough to move. He's on a great contract. And the Raptors kind of have a quasi, like, blockbuster trade package there. When you just look at Terrence Ross and Norman Powell and Jonas Valanciunas and all
the
first-round picks.
I would love either. I would love Ross or Powell on the Sixers. I really like Norman Powell.
I don't think there's anyone on the Sixers that...
I don't think you can drum up the value enough, yeah.
I would like to see – I don't know where I'd like to see him in the world. I don't even want to see him on Portland because as we segue to this league-wide talk, I was discussing this with someone. This summer, knowing how the Kings are, Portland could make a really good play for DeMarcus Cousins if he's still on the
roster. That's interesting. What do you think it takes to get him, though?
If you build an offer – because, again, if I'm the Kings, I want picks – which the Blazers don't really have.
Right.
But if you build an offer around Myers Leonard and CJ McCollum.
The irony of trading Cousins for Myers after last night.
Right. I was actually thinking that is like as bizarre as anything. And you maybe you throw in Noah Vonleh, and you'll have a pick to give You could trade too, but I don't know if the Kings will be interested in something so far down the line. Like, that's not, if the Kings are looking to just bring in the next guy who might be a franchise cornerstone, that's not a bad offer. Again, you'd rather have the picks, like those
Build
Nets
that deal
picks.
around Jake Lehman. That guy's a
You could throw him in, but the Blazers
superstar.
could make a very competitive offer for him, I think. I'm
Oh,
not,
no, I think you're right.
and then you get rid of McCollum, who's great, but now all of a sudden Evan Turner can play on the ball more. You can run pick and rolls with DeMarcus and him. You could run Dame off more screens because Portland, I get why Portland doesn't play CJ and Dame off the ball more, but at the same time, it's like, then why did you sign Evan Turner?
I'll be asking that question for the next 4 years. It makes no, I said it, I mean, we all said it at the time, but like, in what world did it make sense? Turner's only functional on the ball, and I know Lillard and McCollum can play off the ball, but like, it makes no sense.
The other idea there, though, is, and that would kind of have to happen, that would be like a this season thing, is Turner just isn't a fit in Portland. Like, maybe the Kings, desperate as they are in wanting to keep Cousins, do you offer Kufos, McLemore, and Gay in exchange for Turner and Harkless?
I was gonna say, where does Rudy Gay wind up? Because I mean, he's getting moved at the deadline, right? He said he's opting out. Like,
Look,
you have to move
the
him.
Kings are obsessed with ending their playoff drought. And Gay has been him, Cousins, and Garrett Temple are the only ones who are making above average contributions on both sides of the ball. And the Kings are, they're a game back of that eighth seed. If they're still within striking distance, like, I don't know that they move him because they're upset. I honestly
As a
believe
Sixers
that.
fan who saw its team go after eight seeds like they were gold, like no, just
Yeah,
don't
but
do it. Like,
the Kings
just
haven't made the
get.
playoffs since 2006. I'm not, oh, I'm not
They're gonna
defending it.
so yeah so but so then the logic from their end is okay, we're gonna get trounced by the Warriors by 30 points a game in the first round
And
for the
this is going to
sake of
make
saying
DeMarcus
we
want to
for the
stay.
sake of saying we made it in our first year in our new arena. DeMarcus will want to stay. Also, we didn't max out Rudy Gay's value when we could have.
Right.
Like,
So I
I
just.
don't know. I don't know what you're getting for him in a straight up deal, but it's like better than just keeping him and saying we got the A seed. Like
Right.
I.
So that deal to me would be interesting if you went Kufos, McLemore, and Gay for Harkless and Turner, because Turner doesn't have value right now. So Harkless is, he's more than a wheels greaser, but you're getting back. Granted, Gay and McLemore are going to be on some types of free agency this year, but Kufos is on a steal of a contract that kind of makes letting Mason Plumlee go a little bit easier this summer. Or maybe you can. There seems like something workable there because the Kings, you're trading Gay, but if you get back Harkless and Turner, maybe you view Turner as like the point guard because it's not Darren Collison, it's not really Ty Lawson. It doesn't seem like a great move for either team because Harkless has been so good for the Blazers, but you have Aminu, and that if you want to keep both CJ and Dame, like Turner's just not going to work there. So maybe Harkless is, and you have to cut payroll anyway. So maybe it's just worth it, like for a different look.
Can we find a new home for Willie Cauley-Stein too?
Yeah, I mean, why doesn't he go to Houston? He'd be fun there. He'd be fun in
Wasn't was
Toronto
he would
too.
It makes me sad because I really thought he would be exactly like Nerlens, but he's been not
Well, he hasn't really had a chance.
with it.
He
No,
hasn't
he
looked
hasn't. I
bad defensively, like in terms of just
No,
effort and moving
but he
around.
hasn't been as good as I thought he was going to be in terms of like being versatile and switching out and being able to like just stick with guys and pick and rolls and like be able to basically like embrace the positionless thing if they were just gonna be like, all right, you can go out there and fly around, you can guard
You
whoever, and
remember
then
when
we'll.
everyone went bonkers because he was shooting threes like in his draft workouts?
Yes.
Like he took like forever to shoot them and there were no defenders, but he was swishing threes. I was like, oh my God, Willie Cauley-Stein is 3-point range, and it's like, maybe 7 or 8 years from now, but he's not gonna come in the NBA and start chucking triples.
Well, the counterpoint to that is remember when Towns didn't do that at Kentucky and then in his pre-draft videos was shooting threes and everyone was like, oh my God,
Yeah, that's
this
fair.
guy.
But it just
It was different. It
he
was different. They
shot
were two
like Willie
different players.
Cauley-Stein wasn't even allowed to shoot at Kentucky. Like it
Yeah.
just wasn't like a he
It
barely
was,
even played.
yeah. It was protect the rim, run the floor. Yeah.
So I don't know, but that's an idea that's always been interesting to me. I don't really know that there's any other, like Paul George clearly isn't going anywhere now after the terms of the CBA. Like I think if he doesn't want the extension from Indy, that's like this summer, like they'll probably talk about that, and maybe that's when you discuss moving him. But he's not going to be available. There's a dearth of star power. Cousins is the only gettable.
I was going to say that the new CBA seems to make it nearly, I don't want to say impossible, but it's like bordering on that to trade for a superstar now. Like a true superstar, like a real cornerstone.
But that's
like
almost how you have to get him now, is to trade for him, because it's not going to happen. It's either the draft or trade, because it's just it doesn't seem like it's going to happen in free agency.
So then aren't we saying it just incentivizes tanking more? Because it's like, well, these guys aren't going to hit free agency, and if they somehow do, they're certainly not going to be signing with smaller markets like Denver. Like Denver's not getting these guys. Philly's not getting these guys. Like Milwaukee's not getting them. Like you have to get everyone and grow them organically, right? At that point.
That's a good point.
Right? I mean, it's basically, and the owners are, you know, they cry about tanking, but like at this point that you're basically saying, hey, guess what? Go get your guys through the draft.
So maybe
they're not signing in free agency.
Maybe in the interim though, but I guess there would be two upshots, is that it might be a little bit harder to tank because you're not going to have just lost all these franchise players. But the second part is that if you do lose a franchise player, your haul in a trade, because the leverage, even if that guy's not on like his next contract, like the fact that you have the ability to offer him so much money, like that's going to hold value in trade talk. So the value you're getting back is probably going to be so high that it will expedite the rebuilding process.
That's true.
That's an interesting short term. Like if you're the Mavericks right now, or like, you know,
right. How are you – right, if you're one of those teams that's like kind of – or like even
it
if you're a team that's in like purgatory. Yeah. Right.
So
– if you're – like I'm – like, okay, what on earth – I ask this every year. What is Orlando doing?
I have no idea.
Like, please tell me.
Why is Vucevic still there?
Why is anyone there in the first place? That, their roster composition makes no sense, but then they're never quite bad enough. Like they'd have to win the lottery on like just a shot, like because they're never – quite bad enough to get the guy they need in the draft.
They haven't drafted exceptionally well either. Like Oladipo was good, not great. Elfrid Payton is blah. They're not even playing Mario anymore.
I love Gordon, but they don't use him correctly.
Right. So it's like they have. It seems like I don't know why they traded for Ibaka and signed Biyombo. I think you could have justified one of those moves, but even then, the Ibaka one seems a bit more justifiable when you have Vucevic there, because Biyombo and Vucevic are never going to work.
Like, they're like just the bizarro Sixers, because like Payton in an alternate universe is on the Sixers.
Do you know how it really
Vucevic should be there, and like it's just, and they have Jody Meeks.
This route, it really should have been you have Gordon, and then you have Ibaka or Biyombo. And I know that
they should be playing Gordon at the four, right? We're in agreement on that.
And I think I want to see Aaron Gordon on like the Blazers or the Raptors. I think he would play the five. Like, I think that maybe that's not his long term full position, but like he needs to be at the four or five. And he has so much spring that he just works as a rim protector. So
he would be
at the five.
I'm indulging myself here, but he would be so fun as a four next to Embiid. Oh my God. That's like my ideal pairing.
Yeah. Why don't you see if they want Okafor for Gordon? Maybe that's a deal.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll love rolling out the Biyombo, Vucevic, Okafor three man at center.
Do you know, speaking of centers, do you know what I've had in my head for probably longer than I would care to admit? I kind of think the Pistons should consider trading Andre Drummond. Am I batshit crazy?
Well, like,
if you could
in hopes of getting what? They need a wing. They need an alpha wing, right?
Right. Like, what if you built an offer? Again, it would have to be over the offseason, I guess. And I guess Detroit doesn't have all like the matching salaries, but imagine like, I guess that doesn't work because Reggie Jackson. But if you put McCollum on that team, and you have KCP and Tobias Harris, and then you're running out maybe Ed Davis as your starting five, or you can get Myers Leonard. Or Crabbe, if you can get Crabbe.
Drummond, now I'm thinking about Drummond with Lillard would be awesome.
Right, and that seems like the kind of center Portland wants. The problem with him, though, he gets you rebounds, he'll finish pick and rolls, and he blocks shots, but his numbers, they really don't seem to mean anything yet. Like,
no, they don't.
There was a point this year, and I actually haven't looked in a while, but like Detroit's defense was just like worse with Drummond on the floor. And there's a lot of noise when you play so many minutes, but at the same time, like for your franchise center, that's not okay. Like that's
yeah. It's kind of been like, do you think that's been like the narrative of like rebounds and blocks? It's like being conflated with like effectiveness on defense. I feel like that happens a lot, but with him, maybe more so.
Right. I think he's like the modern day like ceiling of it, like because we view him as like this, and again he has the numbers, but Detroit's defensive rating right now,
I'm looking at it right now,
4.4. It's they let 107 points per 100 possessions with him,
which is, if you look at it, that's the third worst mark on the team behind Reggie and Benajay, who barely
plays. There's a lot of noise there because the starting lineup was kind of a mess with Ish Smith for a while, and that's where he spent a lot of playing time. But this isn't like it's not like an isolated thing. Like if you look at last year's numbers of their on and off stats, like the defense was better, but by less than a point per 100%, or let 102.3 points per 100 possessions with Drummond last year, and it was without him 105.7. But like that seems like a deficit that can be replaced when he's so limited to basically pick and rolls on the offensive end. The other thing I will say though is that if Detroit stopped like force feeding him in the post, where once he misses a shot it seems to take him a little longer to get up the floor, maybe his numbers on defense would be better, maybe his numbers on offense would be even better. But if you could turn him into a wing and a guy like, just, I mean, you have Boban, he's probably not your starting center, but you have Lure, who could play some five. Mm-hmm. They love Aaron Baines. Like, Stan Van Gundy's, like, hopelessly in love with Aaron Baines. But if you can get, like, an Ed Davis-type guy, like, or someone who's a little bit more low-key and wouldn't cost as much while getting, like, an upgrade on the perimeter.
Yeah.
So I'm not totally out of my mind. Like, I don't think – I'm surprised we haven't talked about – and maybe it's because he's shown so much loyalty – to the Pistons organization. Like, he just waited, and not that it mattered, but like he waited until he signed his offer sheet this year so that they could go out and spend money.
Right. That's another team, like, not that they fit in the Orlando bucket necessarily, because they did make the playoffs last year and like they do have a roster that makes sense, but
they need shooting.
Just, there's so many teams, I just wonder what their ceilings are long term. Like, I wonder what, I love Charlotte, but like, what are we saying they cap out at ultimately?
Right. I mean,
I don't know. I guess it's just, I'm doing it as
which doesn't mean much.
Right. And, but I mean, on the one hand, sustained success is good. And if they could be a top four team in the East for the next 3 or 4 years, that's awesome. But at the same time, it's like, there's a logical end point and you're going to have to realize what your fate is. It's so tough the way the league is composed right now, because you have the 2-3 superpowers, and
right,
then
and that's
everything
the other thing
else
is
basically an uphill battle.
Unless
for
you're going to tank, like, it sort of behooves you just to tread water and wait out those windows.
Yeah.
Especially, like almost especially in the East, because I think when you look at the Warriors, like, there's just probably more of an incentive in the West to tank. But, like, in the East, like, LeBron's going to get older eventually, and there's all these teams that are mediocre, and some of them are going to fall off. If you can kind of, like, the Celtics, I'm a big fan of, like, them trading for a star, but at this point I'm like, you know, I don't want them trading Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, or Jay Crowder to get him.
For right now, right, because if you just hold on for a little while longer,
and
then
you get that star, then yeah. So, yeah. Like, if you're going to
– Well, and they're going to get one because they have that Brooklyn pick.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, if you can get it for the picks alone, then it makes sense, but if you have to give up any of your core, like – if the Celtics traded for Paul George, let's say, and they had to give up both Brooklyn picks, Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder, it's not an unfair deal, but what is that the difference between ranking third and second in the
right,
East?
I was gonna say, are they even the top team in the East at that point?
No. So it's, but LeBron is just amazing.
But imagine, okay, so then say they don't trade the picks, say they win the lottery, because that's well within the realm of possibility. They get Markelle Fultz. And then you have then not only do you have a superstar in the making plus your original roster, but then you also have trade leverage, because if Fultz develops, then you can trade IT or whoever and you're not losing a lot and you can fill a pre-existing gap.
I guess the only thing is after next season, so they still have sometime is that you have to like crap or get off the pot with Thomas and Bradley, who need new contracts. That's true. So it's better to get the star now so that you can justify, like, if they get a star power forward, like, they're set. If they don't have to bring up, if they don't have to give up Bradley, Crowder, or IT, and then you have Horford, so you can pay Bradley and Thomas, knowing that they'll probably be movable later on, but in the meantime, you can invest in them, get rid of your flexibility. So it's, they can wait. If they just want to tread water, like, you can go forward with this core, hope, you know, one of Jaylen Brown, Smart, Olynyk, your two Brooklyn picks, like one or more of those guys is probably going to turn into like someone really, really good. So you can do that, but if you want to get that star, it probably needs to happen before the end of next season. But again, for me, I wouldn't give up. You know, I'm trying to, like, your leverage is like, you're trying, like, what is that going to do for us? Like, I'll give up the Brooklyn picks, fine, but what are you, like, I don't want to give up any of the actual players. Like, I can, you could, with Terry Rozier there, you could justify getting rid of Smart maybe as like really the primary piece. But if I'm the Celtics, I don't want to touch the core four of Horford, Thomas, Bradley, or Crowder. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
What you were talking about with the Bradley thing, how he's due a new contract after next season, do you think, and maybe this, I don't think it sounds that crazy on the surface, but do you think he's a max player?
I think it'll be different. I think because there won't be as much money floating around. Because, like, for the last, like, I think you could go back 2 years when people were preparing for this cap boon to probably through the end of this summer, the definition of a max contract player is going to change just because of the cap was rising so quickly. But it is going to hit 120 by 2020, apparently. So that's about, if we're averaging it over the next four summers, and obviously, I guess it's really three because we know this summer is going to be a jump. You're probably looking at $5 million extra a year, which seems almost standard to play around with. So I think the definition of max play, like, I don't think if Zach LaVine wasn't going to be a restricted free agent until, let's say, 2020 for some reason, like, I don't think we would view him as a max player, like, reflexively. Like, we know he's getting
max. I view him as a max player reflexively because I think I have a man crush on him. But
well, he could be really good is what I'm saying. But, like, you just know that he's going to get a max deal. Like, now it's just a fact. I'm not sure we say that in 2020 when the cap climate has sort of come to a head and you have these other superstars making some of that, like, pie as well. Cash pie or even whatever you want to say. So, but Bradley, like, his salary is going to double at least. Like, he's going to be making 16.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Alan Crabb got 17 per. Like, so...
I'm going to be comparing... not that anyone cares, but for the foreseeable future, I'm going to be comparing every salary to Evan Turner's, every single one. So, like, Evan Turner's making $17 million next year, 17.9 the year after, and 18.6 the year after. Like, I will compare everything if it's a good or bad deal on that scale. And they're all going to be good because comparatively, there's no way it could be worse. Like, if that's my thing. Like,
that's your worst contract in the NBA right now?
Oh, I think.
Oh. You have Noah, Oshik. Turner's probably top five.
Noah's pretty. I didn't really have a problem with many of the deals that were signed last summer because of the cap spike. But, and I wouldn't, honestly, I wouldn't have had a problem with Turner getting that deal from a team who could have properly slotted in his skill set. But it just didn't make sense there. It was such a head scratcher. And no, I don't know if. And I don't think he thought about it, frankly, from I don't know if tactical, like, if these guys think about, like, the tactical ramifications as the forefront, because, I mean, if you're being offered $75 million, like, that should speak louder. But I remember reading, he said in an interview, I forget who did it, but he said he hit up Andre Iguodala, who's, like, one of his best friends dating back to Philadelphia. And he was like, yo, they're offering me this. And he was like, take it. Just take it.
So,
like, which I get. And you should be doing that because go get paid. That's awesome. But, like, it's not like this was exactly a well-thought-out thing. I mean, I'm sure the front office had a plan in mind. But
I guess you have to think long-term. But I think from what Turner talked about this, that Terry Stotts assured him that he would shoot better from three with the Blazers, which he did for a minute.
But
I also think...
In what regard, though?
Well, okay.
Like,
well,
because of the way they were going to space the floor for him or what? Because his mechanics have never changed.
Right. I just think that the Blazers are adamant that... And they can use Aminu last year as an example. Harkless is an example now. I don't know who's calling me, but that we're just going to let that be an organic podcast interruption. I think he probably looked at that roster and said, like, they'll put me on the ball and run Lillard and McCollum off screens. I would think that would have came up in meetings, and they haven't done that more. And maybe he just thought he would be able to figure it out because he played so well in Boston. And if we're being honest, rather than re-sign Derrick Rose, if the Knicks could absorb Evan Turner into cap space as their point guard, I'd be fine with it. Like, I'm so anti-paying Derrick Rose.
What's crazy to me is, like, I know we were probably grading Turner on a curve last season.
I wasn't.
So but was he – okay, was he that good last year? I know he was good. He was better. He was certainly better, and Stevens put him in a much more – in a role that was far more flattering, and they put him in positions to succeed.
Like, that's his role.
I'm looking at his numbers. Like, he averaged not to use averages as the holy grail, but, like, he shot his best percentage ever from the floor. His three-point percentage was pretty hideous. And his PER, which has never been above 14, was at 12 or was at 13.6. Like, I'm not to say he didn't have a good year, but, like, this guy was worth $75 million.
Okay.
You know?
If you put him in the right role, I think he would have been. And I think, yes, there's something to be said about if we really need to carve out this specific role for him, maybe he's not worth $70 million. But, like, PER is never going to love him because he's not a volume guy.
That's fair, and I'm probably cherry-picking the wrong stats because I have a vendetta,
here's what I... Evan Turner, and I thought the Blazers were going to work. While I did think they were going to use him differently, clearly I was wrong that he was going to work there. But last season, two other players equaled Turner's rebound, assist, steal, and block percentages. Who are they?
LeBron... Is he one?
Yeah.
And the other, Paul George?
No, Draymond Green. So, like, that's still, though, like, that's my point is, like, yes, he was in a smaller role. No, he can't shoot. But, like, he does some of these things. If you're going to let him play on the ball and be that pseudo point guard, like, even if the Blazers were doing that with the second unit, but they can't because you have both Dame and CJ. Like, it's impossible to stagger Turner from both of them. Like, it's just too hard.
Right.
So in another situation, I think he's worth this money. So it was, again, he's not working, so I was wrong. I'm not trying to just say that he's great. But, like, when you don't use scoring aside, like, he does almost everything else. And he can, with the exception of this season, he can finish around the rim. Like, if he gets there.
He's always been pretty controlled around the rim. And I always admired that. But
so I just, is it worth $70 million to the Blazers? Clearly it wasn't. But, like, you could put him on another team, and I think it would work. And I'm even telling you, like, if the Blazers were just willing to throw him into the Knicks' cap space this summer, and you're telling me the alternative was New York throwing a crap ton of money at Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose, I would do it. Like,
I need to, like, twist the knife a little, not to be – well, I am being vindictive. I'm being a jerk. But
yeah, okay.
His plus-minus this year is -186. Which is the worst on that team by over 60 points. Crabb is the second worst at -119.
Well, Crabb hasn't been good either.
He is not.
Defensively, he looks lost, but I think the Blazers are putting him in really bad situations to compensate for their seeing shitty defense elsewhere. But Evan Turner has the second worst plus minus in the league. Only Brandon Knight is worse. I think the difference there is that Brandon Knight has been demonstratively worse than every single other bench player on the Suns. And when you look at the Blazers, it's like, oh, well, crap, Allen Crabbe, you know, has that really bad plus minus as well. So
yeah,
that's another guy, Brandon Knight. Like, he seems like he's been so bad where it's like he shouldn't have any value, but he's under guaranteed contract for 3 years after this one on a pre-salary cap deal. And it's at that point where you would give up value for him, but not too much. So then that makes him even more appealing because he's not going to cost what Eric Bledsoe would in terms of a trade package. And I think me and you rapped about a potential three-teamer. What was it? It was New Orleans sends Philly's second and Buddy to Phoenix. The Sixers get Brandon Knight from the Suns. And then Phoenix also gets Covington to go along with Philly's second and Buddy Hield, and then the Pelicans get Nerlens Noel to pair with Anthony Davis. And I think Buddy Hield might be an overpay now that I'm looking at it for Brandon Knight when you think about it. The Pelicans love Buddy Hield. I think they like the idea that he was a four-year guy. But that would be something I'd be interested to see.
I just missed the – I was just thinking about if Crabbe had wound up on Brooklyn with Tyler Johnson. That would have been so fun.
Even if Crabbe would have wound up in Brooklyn with Jeremy Lin.
Yeah. That, but then we'd probably get deprived of the Sean Kilpatrick experience a little bit, which is a bummer.
Sean Kilpatrick's legitimately really good. And I wrote about that. He's like, he's actually good. And I think the only thing you probably need, like, he's on offense. I'm not saying he's a finished product, but he just, like, he's there. Like, you, if you want to use him a little bit more off the ball, he's shown he can do that. He can run point guard. The only thing he needs to improve upon is probably his defense. And that's going to hurt when Brooklyn has him defending so many point guards anyway.
Yeah.
Sean Kilpatrick is basically Michael Jordan is all I'm trying to get at. but yeah, there's Knight. So there's a lot of names. I just don't know who. Give me three players. I want three players that are most likely to get moved by the trade
deadline.
You can include Noel.
I'm not going to include any Sixers players because I have no idea what – we already talked about that and I don't know what to read there.
You're not even going to predict you're not even going to predict Noel, really? Like, why can't you include him? It seems like he would be.
I get. All right. Nerlens, I think Rudy Gay gets moved even against the Kings' wishes of making the playoffs. There's always one guy who I never consider who gets shipped.
Oh, I think that it's that way. Like, or you hear, like, there's one guy who actually gets moved that you were talking about, but it's to a team and for a package that wasn't even quote unquote on the
like
table
last
before.
Year when Channing Frye got moved, I was like, that makes so much sense. It made too much sense. I was like, how did I not think of that?
So you have Noel, Gay, and who's the other one?
I kind of wonder if I wonder if Hezonja gets moved. I wonder if like Tyreke Evans gets moved too. Those two are up there. I don't think Brandon Knight gets moved because, like, what's like appropriate value for him? I know we talked about it, but
I don't know, and I don't think Phoenix wants to.
Yeah,
wants to do that, and I don't even know what you trade for if you're Phoenix is the other thing. Unless someone's giving you a pick, like it's just, they're not set at every position, but they have guys at every position.
Like Orlando seems to make a move at the deadline every year that's like not really. Like a super compelling, but like, didn't they make a trade last year? And they get like, what am I thinking of?
Who's this?
Orlando. I'm completely blanking. I don't know. I feel like Orlando could be good for a move. They always shake things up, whether it's for better or worse.
To go. Like if you can't trade Ibaka because.
I feel bad for Ibaka. He's basically faded into, you know.
They're going to max him this summer, so my sympathy is limited. But you're not going to trade him when you gave up Oladipo and Sabonis for him. And you're not, like, I don't know who takes on Biyombo's contract. So it has to be.
Thinking of places for Gay, you think the Thunder make a play for him? I know Zach Lowe mentioned them previously. They would like a second scorer maybe to pair with Westbrook.
They want Gay would make sense there, but
I think he makes a lot of sense
but
there.
What do you give up for him? Like I'm not.
I know
giving
that's
up
that's the problem. You can't give up like
a pick in the future because you actually might be bad.
And you're not trading Sabonis for a rental.
No,
Sabonis.
You shouldn't
good.
Be trading Cameron Payne for a rental either. And you shouldn't like and even if you are going to keep Gay, you're going to have to pay him a lot of money.
Like it would have to be a three-team trade where they have to get someone else involved to. Satisfy what Sacramento wants, and then maybe they part with a pick or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I liked the idea of them getting, like, Caspi instead. Like, he's not a secondary scorer, but...
Well, Caspi's another... I mean, Caspi's been really displeased with his role. I kind of... He's also... He would be, for them, maybe what we've wanted Anthony Morrow to be, because he's an actual knockdown...
If the Thunder could have, like, Roberson and Morrow merge into one player...
Oh, well, he'd be a guy I'd pay, like... $13 million a year. I mean,
I'd probably pay more than that, but I'm saying like that's
so you're
what
saying Andre Roberson with a functional jump shot, basically, and no hesitancy. Yeah, that would be great. I do like Roberson. It's just, I also like making fun of him a lot. I'll never forget. I think friend of the podcast, Dan Carson, tweeted one time. He was like, "We need grant money to study Andre Roberson's Eurostep." Like, everything he does is just so painfully awkward with the ball in his hands. Whether he's shooting from the corner or he's taking anyone off the dribble, it's like you're just waiting to see what happens. There's always some unpredictable ending.
Yeah, I would support that. The trade deadline is going to be weird this year, I think, just because with the new CBA, I don't, you know, you're not going to see teams make plays for Paul George and even DeMarcus Cousins.
Wasn't it the same last year? It was quiet, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was like there was a bunch of smaller deals.
Yeah.
I think Gay, I'm leaning towards Gay getting moved because I don't think the Kings are going to be within a game, you know, when we're looking at February of the eighth seed. I can't imagine, like, if Noel doesn't get moved, they're just going to have to pay him. So I think he goes to, and I don't really want to pick Vucevic because you already picked him. So I'm trying to think of who. I honestly don't think the Nets are going to trade Brook Lopez because he's been so valuable from a leadership standpoint. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I think the Blazers are going to trade Evan Turner or Alan Crabb is gone by the trade deadline for them. I think one of them will go. They'll probably end up trading like Harkless or Leonard now that I said that. But
do you think Washington makes a trade?
They need CJ Miles, like just someone off the bench, but I don't know who they give up. I just
don't know. That's what I'm thinking. Like you're not trading Beal. Wall's, you're not trading Wall right now.
It would have to be to a team that's rebuilding and is willing to take a flyer on like Satoransky or say, I don't even know how to say his name. I suck. But like maybe him. I don't know if you want to move Kelly Oubre when you've seen that
might be a little
really hasn't been that good.
Also, how much is Otto Porter getting paid on that extension?
Max. Like, it's just going to – someone's going to offer it to him if the Blazers
don't. I love Otto Porter. His game is so awesome. And the way he's just evolved, too, from being, like, essentially a rotational also-ran, right? He played 8 minutes a game his rookie year.
Right.
And his steady progression, he has, like, a very – what I would say is, like, a normalized, like, developmental curve, right? He's done, like, the exact thing that you expect almost from guys over the life of their rookie contract who are drafted in the spot that he was drafted in, or not what you would expect, but the ideal basically.
No, I would agree. He seems like he would be good as a four, like almost a full-time four. I just don't know if the Wizards are built to use him like that.
They've played him there 30% of the time this year.
Yeah. Which I guess has been, I guess my thinking was like, how are you going to justify not playing Andrew Nicholson, like giving him minutes? And that's exactly what they've done. So I guess they are built to play like that. I just assumed they were going to use him. But their bench is awful, so they need something.
It really is.
But we have gone so far over the time limit that I'm even going to ditch Burns with Bacon again. I was going to go on a little bit of a DeMarcus Cousins rant, but we are at that hour mark.
I don't know if you were going to bash him or not, but my synopsis would be Miles Leonard needs to stop snitching. It was really not okay with his post-game comments.
Those like, were bizarre. I don't necessarily
let it go.
I just don't necessarily like how Boogie was portrayed with the first tirade, but at the same time, people were prepared to give him a pass and saying, like, writers aren't above player critiques. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But Boogie was, like, hot and did it, like, in a completely unprofessional manner. And just as, like, you know, these guys are paid to give their opinions, whether they're, you know, the column itself from the Sacramento Bee Reporter was like, eh, but him mentioning Cousins' brother was whatever, that was germane to the topic. And he didn't analyze it in that particular column. Like it was just mentioned. But just as those guys are paid to give their opinions, whether you like it or not, NBA players, whether they like it or not, are paid to be in the public eye. And Cousins had to know the optics were going to be absolutely awful. I also do not believe that the mouth guard just came out of his mouth. He spit that thing at the
Blazers. I'm not touching that, but regardless of if it was intentional or not, Myers Leonard needs to just keep his displeasure with. I mean, like, is it fun to have this feud? Sure. I mean, Myers Leonard being at the center of a feud isn't like really the most compelling thing, but like,
I didn't even know Boogie was talking about. I didn't see the whole game, but I just didn't even know Boogie was talking about Myers Leonard. I thought he was talking about Mason Plumlee or something. So I was just like, I only caught the end of it because I was writing and watching the other games, and I honestly didn't think that game was going to be very good.
It's way funnier if it's Myers Leonard, honestly.
Well, I'm assuming it was Myers Leonard because Myers Leonard's like, he was talking about me or talking to me or
right.
something. So I've never seen the Blazers push or promote Myers Leonard in the way that Boogie was like describing.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you would like to talk more about the Sixers or our random trade musings, you can get at Alec Nathan on Twitter. He is at Alec B. Nathan, spelled exactly like it sounds. I got your handle right. I think I memorized it by now, right? I'm getting good at this. If you want to talk to Andy or Adam, who didn't love you enough to be here today, Andy is at Andrew D. Bailey, also spelled like it sounds. Adam Frommel is at Frommel09. That's Fromal09. You can find me at Dan Favale, Favale. And you can try and find any of us at the at Hardwood Knox Twitter handle, at Hardwood Knox, which has been pretty dormant over the last few months or so. But we'll eventually get around to tweeting there, hopefully. There will be no shout-out for Beno Udre since Andy Bailey and Adam aren't here, and I have no desire to shout him out. Until next time.